rumors are terrible and cruel, but they're true. Yeah, that's my question. Interesting, because I don't know how that can be read in a heterosexual way.
I am so pleased and elated with everyone's reactions to the Miss Americana episode. I knew we killed it, but and like I loved our conversation with Sean so much, but like I'm so glad that people liked it. I don't know, it just made me
too. I feel like we've gotten so many more listeners since it came out.
Yeah,
and yeah, I love how Sean, everyone reacted to Sean in such a great way.
Yeah. And I think having Sean's input is why we had a little bit more listeners like join us, because
I completely agree.
There was a level of credibility there that he brought. And like,
oh, yeah.
The fact that he was saying the same shit that we've been saying, but without.
Even though he like doesn't know Taylor really.
Yeah.
I loved hearing, and just as an aside, like, I loved hearing an outsider's perspective on her.
Me too.
Like the fact that someone who's like not analyzed everything that she's done for the last year saw her as a queer orphan.
Yeah.
I was like,
that part broke me.
Oh God. That is highlight of, I think, the Archers so far.
I was going to say of the whole. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
He put into words so perfectly what we just feel about her, this queer orphan lost in space, looking for something to tether herself to. It reminded me so much of Invisible String. Sometimes I feel like Invisible String is about her ties to the community. A triple meaning, a quad meaning, endless meanings.
Quad meaning. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I've been thinking about Invisible String so much.
Me
since
too.
Your TikTok that you made about linking it with the invisible contract that Meghan Markle and Harry talk about. For me, that song is so complicated.
Yeah.
Because of the Old Man and the Sea reference. Wait, is it the Old Man and the Sea? I feel like I always get the wrong Ernest Hemingway book.
No. It's
The Sun Also Rises.
Yes.
I'm always saying the Old Man and the Sea. Okay.
I was like, I don't think
The Sun Also Rises, and the like sarcasm in the line, isn't it just so pretty to think? The fact that that is a sarcastic line in the song, I mean, in the book, and then she uses that exact phrasing, like, isn't it just so pretty to think that Joe and I are like connected by this invisible string? Like, isn't that a nice thought? And then how like it's all organized by color, as if she's literally like, you know, the thing that brings us together is the rainbow. That is the invisible string.
There's something really weird about her using teal. Like she goes blue, green, and then teal. And it's like almost blue and almost green, but it's teal. It's its own thing. And it's so purposeful because it's so simple that there has to be a deeper thing for her. She wouldn't just write something that simple. Like,
well, and also the fact that the yogurt shop that Joe Alwyn worked at, their t-shirts are teal now, but when he worked in it, they weren't teal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I was waiting for someone to do that investigating.
I know. You can always count on Gaylers to do unhinged investigation.
I was waiting for someone to look that up because I was going to, and I was like, no.
So, I mean, just the fact that like she named something that like wasn't actually true, but like, again, sounds pretty.
Like the Stephen Colbert, her little collage, truthiness? I always go back to that for some reason, because that whole segment is weird. Still, no one knows what the fuck she was talking about.
The truthiness just sticks out. I mean, and I said this the last time that you mentioned it, but like Stephen Colbert literally built his career on being a conservative version of himself as like a parody.
Yeah.
And to the point where so many people believed it that like they hired him for the press conference for George W. Bush. Like, that's crazy. So it makes sense why Taylor would identify with him and identify with the idea of like a pseudo truth in order to create an identity. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Invisible String is one of those songs that is always going to be a mystery because of all the different possible meanings to it. Truly. And the fact that it's Phoebe Bridgers' favorite song by her is so interesting to me because why?
Yes.
Why, Miss Phoebe? So, this book.
Oh, well, first of all,
welcome to the
Archers. Welcome to the Archers.
Hi. Sorry to open up with such an intense analysis of Invisible String, but hello, Patreon.
Hello. Hello, Patreon. Yes, welcome back to another episode of The Archers in Screaming Color.
Oh, I love that name.
I do.
Seriously.
Too.
So we are here today to talk about Evelyn Hugo, the long-awaited, infamous book in the Gaylor community. In honestly, book talk, I feel like, community, Evelyn Hugo was really big for a while, just like in general, the readers of TikTok. So that's also interesting. But I think Gaylors have sort of like adopted it.
Totally. Yeah.
Another thing I want to just talk about before we get too into it. Mm. Do you think that Taylor had any hand in the writing production of this book?
I really do. Well, do I really? Okay. I really, yes, I guess. Okay. I want to say yes and no, but really what I mean is like, yes, yes, yes. And no, because the fact that Taylor Jenkins Reid so readily responded to someone who said, could Taylor Swift be an Evelyn Hugo type with most certainly. That's what she said. Most certainly.
Oh, most certainly. If we're going word for word, oh, most certainly.
Oh, most certainly.
It's and like, now the tweet's gone.
No.
Also.
Are you the tweet's gone. Kidding me?
I can only find screenshots of it.
Mm. But the tweet did exist, right?
I don't know. I wasn't there. And
oh, no.
I mean, it had to have existed because there's so many screenshots of it. And I think there's even a couple of articles written about it, like author of Evelyn Hugo says it could be Taylor Swift type or like quoting the tweet and stuff. So I think it definitely happened, but the tweet's gone now.
Well, and then, so that was one Taylor Swift reference she made, supposedly, hopefully. I like am now praying to God that that happened in real life. But then also recently someone asked her on like an Instagram Q&A, is the song Gold Rush about Evelyn and Celia? And Taylor Jenkins Reid said, do I think that Taylor has ever read my book? No. But when I tell you that all I could picture was Celia St. James when I read that song, when I heard that song.
What a brave thing to say that you don't think Taylor's ever read your book. Maybe she's just being humble and she's like, I would never say that Taylor would read my book. But
yeah.
There's some word for word references to Taylor's new music that shows she's clearly read this book.
Clearly read the book.
If not, had a hand in it.
So, right. When you ask if I think Taylor had a hand in it, I'm like, I really do because Taylor is fucking insane.
Mm-hmm.
And like Taylor has done so, like Taylor has her hands in so many little honeypots.
Yep.
And I feel like the connections between it are too intense for her to not have had a say in this book. Whether Taylor Jenkins Reid somehow learned a lot about Taylor's life and it's based on it in that capacity, or whether Taylor literally sat down with her and was like, make this book about me, a la Monique and Evelyn Hugo.
Yes.
It's just crazy to think about. And it's like, so a part of me is like, no, like that's not realistic. But then 98% of me is like, yes, she does.
98% of the shit Taylor Swift does isn't realistic. And then she does it. So
exactly.
I also, I got about two chapters in and I was like, okay, Taylor definitely had a hand in this. I looked up when the release date was because I was like, if Taylor did have a hand in this, let's look at this on the timeline of her career. Because I, at this point, I knew Evelyn Hugo from what everyone has been saying. I never looked into it myself or when it was released. I didn't even know anything about Taylor Jenkins Reid. So I looked it up. It was released June 13th of 2017. Now, when I told Katie this, we were both like, no fucking way. Like, no fucking way. Yeah. Taylor's half birthday, A, Pride Month, B, and the 13th. And this is also in the midst of Taylor's hiatus, pre-Reputation. Reputation came out fall of 2017. So this was sort of like leading up to the Reputation's release. She was still in her hiatus. What was she doing during that year? No one knows what the fuck she was up to. And we know Taylor was not just sitting around twiddling her thumbs. And Reputation had to have been, honestly, probably done by the time she went on this hiatus, or at least she was like already in the process of finishing it. You know, like there's no way she took that year to make Reputation all of it.
No, there are so many. So what was she doing? Exactly. There are so many clips of her recording it before her hiatus.
Exactly.
Like, and we know for a fact that she was in the studio recording songs before the hiatus. So yeah, what was she doing?
Now that I'm thinking of it, she had this one interview during her hiatus where she interviewed someone, and it's giving Evelyn Hugo, just the way, because this was during her hiatus when she wasn't doing any interviews, any photo shoots, and she still did this photo shoot with someone, and I can't fucking remember what it was. She was wearing a striped sweater. And it really gave me the vibe of how Evelyn Hugo was like, yes, I'll do the photo shoot, fine, even though I haven't done a photo shoot in however long. I'll do this one as a favor in order for you to keep your job, type of deal. Oh my god, I can't find it now, but it was something. It was with like Rolling Stone or Vogue or someone big, and she, instead of it being an interview with Taylor, it was Taylor interviewing another musician. And it wasn't the one with what's his face?
Yeah, no, that was like pandemic times. Paul McCartney.
That was different. Yes. Yeah. It was different from that one, but it was a similar setup where she was interviewing someone else. And I just read it a couple months ago and I was like, this is so weird. But I laughed to myself because I was like, she only agreed to do this if she was the interviewer and she didn't have to talk about herself.
Wow.
And then as I was reading Evelyn Hugo, I was like, Taylor has this sort of same like mentality of like, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. And it just reminded me a lot of that shoot.
Right.
During the same era when she could have potentially been involved in this book. So weird thing there.
Yeah.
Also, you mentioned maybe Taylor Jenkins Reid like having some inner knowing of Taylor's life and just incorporating it is kind of how I feel about it too. So last night I did some digging on Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Ooh, digging.
Yeah. So August 12th of 2021. So recently, she did an interview with New York Times, and it was about like just all of her books. It wasn't about Evelyn Hugo specifically, but one quote that is like kind of like bolded in the article is, "We're all putting forth a story about our lives that is not exactly our life. What I'm interested in is the difference between the truth and the myth."
Wow.
Tell me that's not folklore.
That sounds exactly like folklore.
Mm-hmm. The line that blurs the truth and the myth. And that just sounded so loud to me.
Wow. Well, and then with All Too Well, the music video, and being about writing a book, and
the red hair,
and
then the blonde woman on the coast in the picture frame in the little terrace on the coast, which is exactly where Celia and Evelyn end up in their apartment with the big terrace on the coast.
Yeah, so if she is Celia, if Taylor is Celia, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about, I feel like one of the biggest discourses right now within the Gaylor community is she bi or is she gay? And I'm not interested in that conversation, making that distinction, because that's not interesting to me. I mean, like the reason why you and I created this podcast was to talk about her inherent queerness and how,
regardless
like,
of what that
regardless
like
of
to her in a label
it,
yeah
exactly like it is not important to anyone but Taylor how she identifies, and like I really want to keep that, but like also I've just been thinking a lot about it, like is she bi or is she lesbian? And it's like, if she is saying that she's Celia, one of the biggest differences between the two, besides, you know, one being white and one being a Latina, is that Celia is unapologetically a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Evelyn is like very secure and comfortable in her bisexuality.
Yeah.
And yeah, her being bisexual and having the love of her life be a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just like, that is so interesting too. The red wig being that. But I love the idea that she could potentially be Easter egging, like writing a novel of herself, writing a tell all of herself.
Yeah.
And someone pointed out that she's been releasing the chapters.
Yeah. And it's very similar to the Evelyn chapters in the way that they're like titled, I guess.
Yeah.
I noticed that as I was changing chapters in Evelyn Hugo. I was like, here's these weird chapters. Like there's chapters, but then there's chapters. There's numbered chapters. And
the fact that this was released right before Reputation, which had all of the news clippings as the like main imagery of Reputation era, and then this book is broken up into tabloids, and every tabloid is a warped, unreal version of what's occurring.
Yes, it couldn't be more obvious to me.
Yeah,
like that Taylor had some sort of hand in it. I know. That's where it's like undeniable sometimes. And even just the way that Evelyn talks about like the media is literally the same that Taylor talked about the media during Reputation, of like people think they know and they don't.
Exactly.
Like literally almost word for word. I wrote a lot down of that. Another thing I wanted to mention about the Taylor Reid article that I found with New York Times, she talked about, I'm just going to read the article, this quote.
Okay.
In 2013, she read a Vanity Fair excerpt from Ava Gardner, The Secret Conversations, about a ghostwriter hired by Gardner to help her dish on her marriages to Frank Sinatra, Mickey Rooney, and Artie Shaw. This was the spark for The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. It sold well and elevated Reed's profile as a novelist, but she still felt she wasn't breaking through as she knew she could. So in the same paragraph where they talk about her success with Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, they talk about a ghostwriter being hired by Ava Gardner to dish on her marriages to Frank Sinatra, Mickey Rooney, and Artie Shaw. So a celebrity hiring a ghostwriter to explain her relationships. Mm-hmm. Her secret parts of her relationships. In the same breath, they talk about that. In the
same breath.
Yeah, ghostwriting.
And then when you think about, meanwhile, in Evelyn Hugo, Monique isn't a ghostwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, Evelyn is like, this is your book. Mm-hmm. Your name is on it. It has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. Like, you're the one writing it. You will get all the credit.
She's like, Monique, I don't care about the fame anymore.
Exactly. Monique is the one that gets full ownership over it. Mm-hmm. And if in real life, assuming that Taylor had a hand in it, also Taylor Jenkins Reid, it completely owns it 100%, and it doesn't have Taylor anywhere on it. Like that, I feel like, is another reason why this idea that Taylor is ghostwriting all of these albums and songs, which is a very popular theory right now in the Taylor community, the idea that Taylor doesn't actually need credit and everything, and she's just writing these songs for artist just to write them
because she's good at it.
Like that is very in line with Evelyn Hugo being like, I don't need this.
Yeah,
I just want the story to be told.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've gone down a rabbit hole recently of like thinking she wrote the whole X album for Ed Sheeran, and and she ghostwrites for him a lot, which I could totally see. And yeah, you're right, I didn't even think about that parallel though, of just like Evelyn being like, I don't care about the fame anymore, I've had enough recognition, people have said my name enough. Like it adds up. Again, also in this same, like a couple paragraphs later, she talks about oral histories and just a lot of weird parallels post the book being released. This is, you know, 4 years later than it's been released.
Wow. Oral history, like folklore, that's exactly what folklore is.
Literally the definition.
I love how suspicious you sound of Taylor a lot of the time. Like you're like, that's a weird thing to say. Like I wish that we could just drop in Cardi B being like, that's suspicious. That's weird.
Suspicious.
Yeah.
I also love the TikTok sound going around right now. Interesting reaction. I am so suspicious of her Scorpio rising ass.
As you should be.
Yeah.
Ooh, our little Scorpio rising, our little duplicitous girl.
Yeah. Love her.
Me too.
Immediately.
That's something we don't talk enough about. That we love Taylor.
That we love her. actually thinking about that when I was listening back to the Miss Americana episode. I was like, I hope people don't think that we hate her. Like, I hope they know we are fans of her saying this. It's coming from a place of peace and love. Like, it's not, I just, like she said on like one of the talk shows during the Red release, she was like, you know, me and my fans have our jokes, whatever. I hope she means us. I hope she means the way that Gaylors are so mean to her, but in the most loving way.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We're going to, like, the reason we're Gaylors is because we believe that she's complex and incredible and so mm-hmm. smart and, like, so wonderful. Like, we actually believe in her, and that's why we put up with all the bullshit we do from Hetlers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we have a right to talk shit about her.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, I'm going to start with my list of nonsense that I have. Which begins on page like zero, I guess. Smash the patriarchy.
Interesting. Smash the patriarchy. Where have I heard that before?
Interesting reaction.
Smash the patriarchy. Doesn't that sound like it would be a great keychain, perhaps?
Yeah, it sounds awfully familiar. And from a song that had the 10-minute version that looked like Celia and Evelyn, you know, like, I'm like, girl, are you being that loud?
Right. Right. Wait, that is so true. Of course. That is literally the Celia and Evelyn connection is in that music video.
Like, I actually just put that together too. Like, I knew fuck patriarchy, but then I forgot that was in All Too Well.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I didn't connect them when you said it earlier. So I wonder, don't you feel like, what is the edited version of All Too Well 10-minute version? Like, what is the radio is version? There? I kind of assume that there is because it was like number one on the
smash
charts.
Smash the patriarchy.
What if she says smash?
Keychain on the ground. I think it just goes blank if I'm being
Yeah,
honest.
That would make sense. Like, because on SNL, it just blanked out too. If there was a clean version, she probably would have said the word on SNL. Okay.
Imagine she's like, smash the patriarchy,
Taylor Jenkins Reid.
now I'm like looking at the credits page and I'm like,
I'm gonna get to the bottom of this.
It has like a crazy disclaimer. I don't know if all books have this.
Yes, all books do. Okay. You don't even need to read it because
okay.
Literally every time I read a book and I'm like any relation to any people living or dead is a complete coincidence.
Yes. I was like, I'm like, why you gotta say that?
I know. I just never looked. That.
Yeah.
Yes, our little nonfiction reader. No, that like makes every book sketchy. It really does.
I haven't read a fiction book since I was probably 13. Actually, that's a lie. I probably read fiction in high school for like to write essays like Fahrenheit 451 or like, I don't know, the books you have to read for
the classics.
Even those, I wouldn't really make it all the way through. I just like would read half of it and then like look the spark notes. But to make it through a full fiction book was an accomplishment for me. So thank you, Taylor Swift and Reed. But yeah. So yeah, that was my first note. Smash the patriarchy. And then of course, Evelyn saying, my mother raised me to be polite, to be demure. I have long operated under the idea that civility is subservient, but it hasn't gotten me very far, that type of kindness. The world respects people who think they should be running it. Civility. I have long operated under the idea that civility is subservient.
I mean, that echoes Seven, of course. Mm-hmm. And it also echoes Marjorie and elders telling you to wield politeness.
Wow, that type of kindness. Never be so kind.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. I never even thought about Marjorie. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Never wield such power you forget to be polite. Yeah, those are great connections. Okay.
I think it also just goes with Taylor Good Girl vibes. And
oh, yeah. Pretty much her, anything like, that's like, I was taught to be a good girl. I'm like,
yeah.
Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor.
Exactly.
Also, I think this is Evelyn talking about herself. Oh no, this must be Monique talking about Evelyn. How does she know how much to give and just how much of herself to withhold? And does that all change now that she has something to say? Or is she going to play me the same way she's played audiences all these years? And in parentheses, I just put very Taylor. Like, I could just, I could almost see Lana Wilson in that, mm-hmm. in like directing Miss Americana type of vibes, being like, I wonder if I'm really going to see Taylor, or if I'm going to see the Taylor that she is going to present as the real Taylor, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I do.
And then of course, quote, word for word, what Evelyn said, you're going to write a book about it and package your name on it and we'll tell everyone you wrote it. That's ghostwriting. My name won't be on it. I'll be dead. The old Taylor can't come to the phone right now. And then Evelyn talking about her mom. I know that Taylor's never talked about her mom like this, but it just sounded like Last Great American Dynasty. Mm-hmm. She said, I had this fantasy of us buying a house on the beach and throwing parties and drinking champagne. Yes. And then she died.
Yes.
So the house on the beach, that reminded me of like, this is why we can't have nice things.
Oh yeah, tossing pennies in the pool, of course. Absolutely.
Tossing roaring 20s, yeah. champagne, filling the pool with champagne. So I thought that was interesting. Something I noticed a lot is like these parallels, but they don't make sense. Like it sounds a lot like Taylor's life, and then it's like a switch. And it's like, oh, but mm-hmm. Evelyn's talking about her mom, so it's not Taylor-rated. Yeah. Because yeah. Taylor's not talking about her mom when she sings about those things. So bait and switch vibes, all of this.
But again, it's like, it doesn't really matter in fiction who yeah. it's attributed to, because it's like the language is there. The mm-hmm. wording is there. The imagery is there. Yes. So it's like, in general, you're just reading something that keeps provoking Taylor images.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this made me so sad. Evelyn's whole beginning talking about Ernie.
Oh, yeah.
She was 14. He was 22. And she wanted to be famous and she would do whatever it takes to make it happen. Word for word quote.
Uh-huh. Like
very that, Taylor.
Very Taylor. Very pretty much how most like young women get to Hollywood is mm-hmm. like being forced to, whether being forced because of like actual a person telling them they need to do that, or because like that's how our society works, is that like mm-hmm. you know, women can't get through the door themselves most of the time, but it's yeah. like having to be in a relationship with an older man just to get you ahead.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally what All Too Well is about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it also made me sad because there's been blind items about Olivia Rodrigo and how a lot of older people in the industry will like flirt with her at events and stuff, and she goes along with it because she like wants the fame and the recognition. So it reminded me of like Nothing New, and like she'll say, she got the map from me, I'll cry myself to sleep. I always thought that line wasn't to be like hater vibes to the up-and-coming female artists at all.
No, never.
But more so just like, I feel so bad for them.
Yeah.
They're gonna end up here.
I always read that line as so heartbreaking because she's like, why did the map I create look like this?
Mm-hmm.
Like even at 22 years old, mm-hmm. she was like, why did I do it this way?
Mm-hmm. And why now she still yeah. feels that way. Like,
yeah, she probably feels that way more than ever, because, you know, now she's like 32 and she's like, you know, in her MILF era. So she really is like mm-hmm. mothering all these young up and coming stars. Like she's no longer their peer, really.
Yeah.
A 22-year-old and a 17-year-old, depending on context, can feel like peers. A 32-year-old yeah. and a 17-year-old never yeah. will feel like peers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like more of a mentor to all these younger yeah. artists now, like Olivia or Conan Gray, even mm-hmm. like Girl in Red, Shawn Mendes. I know she's been a mentor for a while, another closeted king.
And he is a king.
He is a king. I love Shawn Mendes. I want nothing but the best for him.
Me neither. Literally the moment I heard him say that Joe looks like a villain, I was like, I'm adopting you.
Yeah. I was like,
you're my
you.
Child now.
He may have been sweating and shaking and, you know, probably had a lot of words said to him after that interview, but I am forever grateful for him putting himself out on the front lines like that.
He
did something no one else could ever.
No one else could ever do. Like this, we need to do an aside for that right now, because the thing
post-Grammygate, he said that.
Post-Grammygate, and more importantly, how many fucking celebrities would have pinged the lie detector and then covered it up like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. I can't believe it pinged about that. Like, of course I think Joe is a good guy.
Yeah, like tried to cover it up. He didn't yeah. give a
No. No, he was like, I guess he does look like a villain. I guess I don't like him.
And he even goes on to just be like, I've never met him, so I don't know, but this is what I think. Like... He's just like, he is not, I've never met him, so I can't say anything bad, but I've never met him and I still think he looks like a villain.
Incredible. I'm obsessed.
It's so giving Cher.
It is. Damn. Speaking freely about fellow celebrities is giving Cher.
It's giving Cher.
Oh, he really knew. He really knew.
I'm so obsessed with him. I don't know if you know this, but I used to be a harmonizer. I used to love Fifth Harmony. So is Camila that what Fifth has
Harmony like groupies are called
harmonizers. Yeah.
Oh my god.
That was my whole high school. That was actually how I realized I was gay, because I shipped Camila and Lauren from the group together, and I was like, they're definitely dating. Like, there's no way they're not. And then everyone was like, why do you care about this if you're straight? Like, almost how when they're straight gaylers, I'm always like, interesting reaction. I'm like, So yeah, that was kind of how I realized I was like queer in some way. I just didn't accept it till very later on. But I was like, right. Oh, that's definitely there. Why do I want to watch these two women touch hands during an interview? Kind of weird.
Just judging yourself.
It's all it is. It's just like this. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm like, they're together. Like,
that is so cute. Wait, so, and remind me, Camila is out bisexual or Lauren is out bisexual?
Lauren is out bisexual, but she was outed by Perez Hilton, who we know just had a rampage spree of tweeting about Taylor Swift being a lesbian.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh my God, you did this to Lauren already. And he was like, yeah, but Taylor's like out. It's different. God. But yes.
Okay. Lauren, honestly, though.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with Perez. Like, Taylor is out. Like,
that's why
she has been like outing herself for so long.
He did out Lauren. I will give
everyone
that.
Just about Taylor.
That was
just
about actually Taylor. Outing her. But yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I can differentiate. Like, I know he outed Lauren. He's not outing Taylor because Taylor's outing herself. She came out with "You Need to Calm Down," and that was the end of it. She's out. Like, exactly. She's me out Lesbian Visibility Day now. Out now.
Happy Pride to you too.
Happy Pride to you too.
Exactly. But okay, so he did out Lauren, but so Camila is not out.
No, and that's why she was dating Sean.
Of course. No, I just kind of assume, I could have sworn that she did a song with
she's out Halsey as a very
or something.
She's out as a very heavy ally. She is one of the people, like Taylor, that posts every year during Pride Month, is like, happy Pride Month, everyone. Like, so happy to be an ally, support you guys always. Like, literally, I was scrolling through her Instagram the other day, just like seeing what she was up to. And she had like 4 Pride Month posts last year. Like, she's definitely queer, but she's not like out.
Yeah.
Which is why she was with Sean, and they were bearding besties.
Yeah. Bearding besties. Just like another couple we know.
Yeah. I hope they're still besties. I don't know. He's a villain apparently to Sean.
No, I'm so sorry. I wasn't even thinking of Joe and Taylor.
Oh, I was different bearding besties. Harry and Evelyn.
No. Or someone else. Oh my God.
There's so many. Sorry.
I'm so sorry. I really should come out and say it, but you've mentioned it recently. So I want you to like organically know what I'm thinking. Okay. Another young Hollywood couple that are bearding besties. Obviously,
Tom and Zendaya.
That's right. Tom and
Zendaya. Okay. Yeah. I've been talking a lot to people about that. People think I'm crazy. And I'm like, no.
No, they're crazy. Everyone else is crazy. Zendaya and Tom are obviously I say, bearding though, besties.
Yeah. I don't know if it's bearding. It could be.
Yeah, it could be.
I think it's just PR, but it also could be bearding. I don't know. They both could be queer. Zendaya.
That's the thing. I know that Zendaya is queer, and I know that, and like, Sean, we didn't talk about this, but Sean is adamant, like, just like knows inherently as a queer man that Tom Holland is also a queer man.
Okay. I believe that.
He feels that way about Jake Gyllenhaal as well.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, he really feels that way about Sean. So I'm like, not Sean Mendes, sorry, Tom Holland. So yeah. Anyway, totally. Back to bearding besties.
A little too hard. Yeah. So bearding besties. I love that I just named 4 other bearding besties before getting to the one you were referencing.
Me too. But yeah, Harry and Evelyn. Yeah.
Yeah. Love them. Another quote from Evelyn that was very Taylor. I spent a lot of time learning how to spin the truth. It's hard to unwire. I've gotten too good at it. It reminds me of like Long Pond, because I could see it in her face that she was like, I'm just lying again. Like, you know?
Yeah,
she just seems so accustomed to just being like, yeah, he was playing the piano because he likes creating stuff. And
gulp.
I walked in. Yeah, I walked in and he was playing it. Yeah, that's what happened. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gulp. I mean, she has to lie. Like, I hate, it kills me so much that lying is considered inherently morally wrong. Our world is so fucking complex that, like, celebrities, mm-hmm. lying is all they can do to protect themselves. Yeah. Like, who cares if celebrities are lying? Like, we're mm-hmm. obsessed. Like, we have parasocial relationships with them. Let them lie.
Yeah, they have to. Yeah. If not, then everyone's getting too close.
Like, also, the idea that lying is inherently bad when you're just speaking to the general public. No, lying is mm-hmm. bad when you're in a trusting relationship.
Exactly.
Like, if you're one of Taylor's best friends and she was lying to you, that's, like, cause for alarm. She mm-hmm. doesn't fucking know us. Let her lie.
That's where it gets like weird parasocial and people start like fighting because it's like you're trusting this woman too much for someone you don't know or have a relationship with. You do not have an interpersonal relationship with this woman. There's no reason that she owes anyone the truth.
Yeah.
I also love that Evelyn said, everyone I loved is dead now and there's no one left for me to protect, no one left to lie for but me. And it goes back to why we think that Taylor doesn't do an official coming out thing because it would mm-hmm. out so many people that she has to protect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Diana, she'd Carly, have to... whoever else.
Yeah, she'd have to craft a narrative, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just proving that celebrities lie also, just in general.
I mean, that's, I think, why I'm so obsessed with this book as a Taylor mm-hmm. parallel, is because the whole thing is about how she lies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every one of her relationships is a lie in some way.
Yeah.
Like, I guess she has, like, two real husbands that she, like, is romantically...
But it's still not the full truth.
Exactly. It's still not the full truth.
And that's why I also wrote, people have so closely followed every intricate detail of the fake story of my life, and it's not.
Exactly.
Evelyn says, I was just 15 by that point, but my father signed the papers. I have to think Ernie suspected I wasn't of age. So her father's the one that signed the papers for her to be in this relationship with Ernie. Very reminiscent of All Too Well. You Who Charmed My Dad. Why bring up your dad in a song about a lover? What does he have to do with it if not patriarchy and you're being sold as a fucking bride? You know what I mean?
Shit. Wow, Madison. Wow. I'm really glad that you said that. Wow. That puts that into such different perspective for me. Yeah.
Right. And even when she talks about, I don't know, just whenever she brings up fathers or like her dad, it's always in such a weird context to me. So like her dad talking shit about his tattoos and like her dad being charmed by this older guy. What does that have to do with her relationship with him, if not him controlling it in some way?
Yeah, definitely.
Why would him being charmed by Jake Gyllenhaal affect anything with their relationship? Why did it have to be talked about in the song?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really interesting because it also proves famous people like Britney, like Taylor, like all these other people, their parents are the ones that get them started in the industry and sign all the papers.
Oh, that is so right. Wow. Amazing.
There's a part where Evelyn bleached her hair and cut it at a shoulder length bob. I was like, okay, Bleachella.
And the fact that that was right after Taylor had done that. Incredible.
Yeah. And in talking about Ernie, there's that quote, which I saw, I think a lot of people have talked about this, but in the context of us talking about All Too Well now, she says, if we're going by the metrics that all's well that ends well, then I guess it's safe to say that I'm not sorry.
All's well that ends well.
In the context of Ernie, which could potentially be almost parallel to the All Too Well story with like Jake older.
An older guy that like she only used to get Evelyn in. Only used to get in. Yeah, exactly.
Ugh, crazy.
Wow. It is crazy.
And then Ernie ended up remarrying a woman named Betty. don't think that has any connection, but still hilarious.
Still hilarious that there's only like a few names going around, you know. And Betty is one of them.
Exactly. Her and her second husband got married at the Beverly Hills Hotel. Who is Don?
Yeah.
And it was also when Evelyn says Don was out to prove he was a cowboy.
Oh my God.
And her whole story about cowboy like me is like this couple at a resort and swooning and whatever. I can't. It's too much for my little brain.
Oh my God.
Another quote, exactly like Miss Americana. Praise is just like an addiction. The more you get of it, the more you need to stay even. Ooh, this part's crazy. This is something I could never, ever say on the main podcast. Harry mentions in them, like, talking about some planned, like, pap walk. He says, we can call over to Photoplay, which is, like, a paparazzi company. And does that not sound like PhotoGrid, I believe it's called?
Yes, PhotoGrid. The one Kardashians use. And the
that
one
Sean that, and like, Camila use.
Yep.
That Zoe and Channing Tatum use very recently. That all of the Taylor and Joe pictures come from. Like, every single one comes from PhotoGrid. Every single one.
Oh, my God.
So, another proof that this happens. Also, the fact that this takes place in, like, the 50s or 60s and so much of it is still so relevant is, I think, a really big, like, point that Taylor Reid Jenkins is trying to get across, that, like, nothing has really changed in the industry.
Exactly. And, like, we know that from tons of other people talking about, like, bearding and, like, how you still really aren't allowed to be gay unless you want to be marginalized to being just gay.
Yeah, like, we still know
that's happening. Yeah. So the fact that she's like, this was happening in the 50s and this is still happening now is crazy.
Yeah. The fact that there were so many parts where I was like, oh, I forgot this was the 50s or 60s.
Totally.
This part is like almost a direct quote from Miss Americana. Correct me if I'm wrong. They think to themselves that there was something about me that they never liked. There was just something and they couldn't put their finger on it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she said that in Miss Americana, that people find a reason and they don't know, but then they just find a reason.
I mean, she says that about herself, I think, watching the clips of herself in the Me music video.
Exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah.
During playback, she's like, there's just something about her that I don't like. It's like, oh my God.
You're just in the world that everyone has pushed you into. So sad.
Yeah.
Oh, this part is so interesting. Celia says, I looked over to see Robert whispering into Celia's ear. She was laughing as if he actually had anything funny to say. Gives exile. God.
Yes, exactly. Like, oh, just the performance of it and like how the performance of it is like, she's lying. Like, that's not true. She doesn't really find that funny. Like, she doesn't actually like him. But it's also like, there's so much distance between us right now and we're so disconnected. I don't actually know whether she's lying.
Yeah.
I don't actually know.
And that's
know
how good at it she is too.
Yeah.
Evelyn was going to get her knuckles bloody in that moment. She's like, he doesn't have anything funny to say. The fuck are you laughing at? Something so I loved about this book, other than the Gaylor, other than the gay stuff, other than very interesting, like seeing the inner conflict of like bisexuality and just everything about it, the male gaze and how perfectly it was, it almost felt like the biggest takeaway in this book, like of how good these two women were able to perform the way that men wanted them to.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like it can be divided into their public life and their personal life was the male gaze and the female gaze.
Yeah. I loved hearing Evelyn's like inner dialogue when she married that guy in Vegas. And her just being like, you do this, you do this, you do this, and then I got him on wrapped around my finger. Like, she's like, everything goes according to plan because I know what I'm doing. I know how to just trick these men. They're that easy, you know.
God, the way that Evelyn uses her sexuality as a
weapon.
I mean, it's not just weaponized sexuality. It's like a spy would use like a decoder, like a spy would use a truth serum. Like, she doesn't just weaponize it. She it's her intelligence. It's her everything. Like, she literally sexuality is her superpower, basically.
Power, yeah,
her power. And the fact that it's not in a, you know, it's like that idea of the Bond girl, like a Bond girl is James Bond's weakness because she's so sexy. And it's like a Bond girl could easily be working for a man, and she's like a man, a Bond girl's like a man's weapon. But with Evelyn, it's like, we really don't just get the glamour of weaponized sexuality. We also get the idea of a weapon having that inherent backlash and a weapon being so destructive, not only to the person that it's aimed towards, but also the person wielding the weapon. Because like she has such a fucked up relationship with her sexuality and sex until Celia.
Yeah.
Dawn, obviously, like her, you know, her first like good sex where she realized she would want to have sex is with Dawn. But then like that's all destroyed basically because Dawn is an abuser and like a horrible person. Right. And then like with Celia, it's like she is able to have ownership and see sexuality as not a weapon. As like a mushy, beautiful, lovely part of herself. But then she still has to turn that on when she goes with what's his name?
I don't remember.
But like her third husband or whatever.
The quick Vegas one.
The quick Vegas one. Like that, it's like not just sexy and glamorous how she uses her sexuality as a weapon. It also is like destructive and painful. Yeah. And I just love that like Taylor Jenkins Reid was able to craft a book that holds those two realities. Because it's it's so painful seeing girls that are literal sex objects and the sort of like power that male directors want us to be like, she's powerful because she has control over men through her sexuality. It's like, okay, but what's her internal landscape like?
Exactly.
How does it feel for her to actually wield that power?
Mm-hmm.
And then on the flip side, you get like these kind of old school, like second wave feminist auteurs that any sort of like sex work is inherently like it's she's broken. She is like, she's a shell of her former self because she uses her body in this way. And it's like, oh, like that's just not, maybe not just as bad, but it hurts just as bad. It feels just as bad. The idea that like, okay, so just because you're using your body in a sexual way, like it's just another form of labor with its own sort of consequences. So I love that Taylor Jenkins Reid was able to craft this heroine that sexuality is a complicated, beautiful, and it can be both. It can be both, and it is both frequently in the same thing.
And I loved what you said about it kind of being this weapon aimed at everyone else, but it also hurts herself.
Yeah.
Because it reminds me of when she was in that movie directed by Max, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. And the one that sent Celia over the edge, the sex scene Celia left her for, and how she was like, I only want to do this sex scene because I want to empower women to let them know they can enjoy sex and this and that. And it ends up backfiring on her. She does get this incredible accolade for her performance, but then it backfires because she's not taken seriously. She's only seen as a sex object.
Yeah.
From there on out.
And it backfired on her because it like crossed a boundary in her relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the other thing that I really, really love about this plot with her and Celia is that it really shows how long life is.
Mm-hmm.
Like so much of the time, I feel like romances don't span many years. Like some of my favorite movies are ones that take place over 24 hours, like just a snapshot into what it's like with a one day with a person. Like that's so romantic. And I love that. But this idea that like you messing up with a person, like time does heal in that people are growing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Evelyn really fucked up by doing this extremely intimate thing without talking to her partner.
Yeah. Without checking if she was crossing a boundary. Yeah.
But like she didn't fuck up in general by doing that. Like that she just chose someone. She just prioritized something over her partner.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like years and years passed and she and Celia got to places where like they were ready to not prioritize things over their relationship.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not, like you said, it's time healing them because they're growing as people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what a wise, it's such a wise understanding of the complexity of relationships.
And I also loved, there was like little moments where You know me, I'm like polyamorous, so I look for any reason to talk about something other than monogamy. I love
that. Yes, yes, yes.
And there were so many points where this is why I bring polyamory into my discussion sometimes having to do with Taylor, because of things like how John and Celia and Harry and Evelyn were doing this kind of like double bearding situation, but to the public it was double dates because they're heterosexual. And there was a part where she actually said people would rather think of us as straight swingers than as just like gay monogamous people. And I thought that that was so interesting because it goes to show that people can think outside of monogamy in a way of like they can think about swingers, but at the end of the day, heteronormativity is what colors everything. Like, there's a lot of discourse about monogamous privilege, I guess, in a way, and just how mononormativity more so, I guess, not so much privilege, like, but it, there is systemically like privileges, but mononormativity and how it's similar to heteronormativity. But this kind of proved that at the end of the day, heteronormativity is why mononormativity is as strong as it is, if that makes sense. So it just, it had me thinking a lot of intersections that was just like so fun for me to dissect, and the way that they were setting boundaries and the way that it was platonic. But I don't know. I really loved that, because people think monogamy in the way that we do it as like non-famous people with our lives publicized is how famous people do it too, and it's not, because you can't. Those are business deals, relationships, whether they're real or not.
Well, so I really would love to hear your thoughts as a polyamorous person about, so there are like three instances in the book that I can think of off the top of my head of like potential cheating, and I put quotes around cheating. The first one being when she went and got married and like slept with Rex, obviously. Right. And that did break up her and Celia's relationship because, you know, Celia was like, I didn't know you were going to sleep with him. I thought you were just going to get married. And like sleeping with him and actually doing that ruined things for Celia.
Yeah.
The second time was when Harry and Evelyn were having sex to have a baby.
Yeah.
Like, she was actively having sex. Like, they didn't do, like, a turkey baster situation.
No, yeah.
And it's like Celia was comfortable with that because she was like, oh, well, Harry's gay.
And cheating is based off of there being a boundary set and a boundary crossed. And they set the boundary that she could have sex with Harry. She didn't set the boundary before that she was going to have sex with Rex. She assumed, which was the first problem, she assumed that Celia would be okay with it because she assumed it was a part of getting married. Well, duh, how am I going to marry this guy without having sex with him or having sex be a bait for him to do it? Obviously, Celia, but she didn't talk about that with her. There was never a boundary set. And so Celia was like, that's cheating in my book. But the second one wasn't, because they talked about it and that boundary was set. And that's like the whole thing about polyamory is just like setting concrete boundaries so that when it's crossed, everyone involved knows that there was a boundary there to begin with and that it was crossed.
Exactly.
I loved that example of growth too. Like we were talking about growth, like from the Rex situation and her having sex with him without Celia knowing or being aware of it to like, hey, is this going to be okay with you so that we can have a kid? And the great example that Celia sets of like, no, I'm not comfortable with that, but we can continue to talk about it. And maybe one day I will be. And then she was at some point because they clearly had the baby, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then also I love going into that about how when Evelyn wanted to do the like sexy movie for Max, or not for Max, but with Max, she wanted to be like the sex pot. Celia was really excited for Evelyn to do that because she didn't want Evelyn to be a mom. Like, she didn't want Evelyn to be like trapped in a mom role. Like, Celia still wanted Evelyn to be like, she wanted to be with a hot girl, basically. And so like, she was okay with Evelyn being a sex pot to a degree, but then it was like, oh, Dawn is the one, like your former husband that you actually did have feelings for at some point, like is the one you're doing it with. Like that's where my boundary stops. And that was obviously like the big breakup is her just having a simulated sex scene with him.
Because again, she didn't set that boundary before she did it.
Exactly.
And that's where I was like, oh, Evelyn, you did such a good job with the Harry thing. Like, you could have just talked about it before. You could have just talked about it. You could have just talked about it.
I know, it's just devastating. But it's really like, Evelyn prioritized her career and her fame over Celia.
Yeah. And that's what it comes down to.
That's what it comes down to. Because, like, she was okay with setting a boundary for a baby. Having a child, but she wasn't about to let someone, the possibility of Celia saying no, like she wasn't going to not do it. So why even ask for permission?
Clearly. Yeah. I mean, she did it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That part pissed me off.
Of course. Yeah. Me too. It's really painful when these people that we like trust and empathize with are like selfish.
Yeah. Like I was like, come on, girly, this conversation should have happened. But yeah, I just loved kind of the blurred monogamy. The term me and my partner use is monogamish. Everyone in this book is monogamish.
Monogamish. I love that.
Because they're not necessarily poly. None of them are really poly, but they're monogamish.
Yeah, exactly. It's way more blurred and complicated than you would ever think. And I think that's true for Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, exactly. I really think that's true for Taylor because, like, I mean, we just don't know how much relationships are strictly PR or a little more complicated, like PR with benefits, you know? Yeah, like, who knows? Like, I think the reason why Taylors, like Harry Styles and Taylor Shippers, are so prevalent is because, like, a lot of us just love imagining two hot queer people being together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I personally don't like shipping Taylor and Harry because like I just that's not like where my attraction
is. 2022. It's maybe when I was like 14, I would have loved that. Cause that's honestly how old I was when they were doing their thing. Like,
yeah. Like I'm just not at a point where I really like to imagine like a man and a woman.
Taylor.
Together.
That too. I just don't like to imagine Taylor with anyone too.
It's like we just above all love single Taylor.
Yes. I just love single queer Taylor. Yeah. Single queer Taylor auntie to all of her little friends' kids. Like,
I know, just being like the king, being the man, like smoking her her cigars, man cigar. Her macho man cigars.
Yeah.
Like that's the Taylor that both of us just love. But of course I understand Taylor shippers because I'm like, yeah, they're both hot and queer. Like, why wouldn't you ship them together?
No, yeah. I'm obsessed with our takes because we just really don't care about who she's involved with.
Yeah, like, exactly. But just can't you picture like Harry and Evelyn? First of all, in the world of the book, everyone loved in general Harry and Evelyn. Like, remember at the beginning there was that comment on like the message board in the book where it was like, that was the real love of her life.
Yeah.
Her breaking down crying over his grave. Like, they were really in love. Like, I feel like after, in the world of this book, after Monique's tell-all tale came out, there would still be so many fucking people who were like, that's not true.
Harry and Evelyn
were madly in love.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, they had sex to have the baby. Like, this is by erasure saying that they weren't actually together.
Yes.
And it's like, it's not by erasure. Like, Harry's allowed to be gay and wanted a child and loves his best friend enough. And
a life partner.
A life partner. That's like platonic.
If that's not the most queer thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
To have like a life partner of the other sex. And especially like, this is the last time we're going to get into it. I'm sorry, everyone. But I'm like polyamorous, but also mostly I don't love to identify as polyamorous. I like relationship anarchist better because it sounds badass, first of all. And second of all, it just like makes more sense for my brain of what I like.
I love that.
And in that, I hold all of my relationships in the same level. They're all on the same level. Friendships, platonic, sexual, romantic, all of my relationships are on the same level, on the same playing ground always. And I loved Harry and Evelyn together because it was a perfect example of relationship anarchy, of like, we can actually make this up however we want. So what we're going to make up is that me and you are life partners. We're going to parent kids together because we can. Who else do you want to raise a kid with other than me, right? Like their whole conversation. And like, yeah, we're friends. We could raise kids together. That's relationship anarchy, right? You know, like if that's what we have to do and that's what we want to do, then let's do that. And then we can also have other partners. Like, it works.
Exactly. Yeah. Because like,
do what works for you. Like,
exactly. Oh, that's heavenly. I mean, that is really true. When you come down to it, Evelyn Hugo is a relationship anarchist.
Relationship anarchist. She's the perfect example. Yeah.
She really is.
Another reason I loved this book so much, aside from like all the Gaylor and everything, I was just like, wow, like, I love this is what I've always imagined. And to see a story with a character that is like that, like, oh, love.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to skip never through some
apologize.
Of these.
Never apologize for bringing that up, especially like apologize for bringing up your relationship anarchy and like polyamorous, because it's like, I just, part of all of this and breaking down Taylor for both of us is like, in the general world and the general Gaylor world, it's breaking down any sort of normative structures that we think are in place. Because the reality is so much more complicated and intense, and like, we don't know, and therefore we shouldn't assume that any sort of anything. Structures that we're like, yeah, exactly, we shouldn't assume anything.
Yeah. And that's where I come from it too, but I know that people feel a lot of things about non-monogamous people, and I understand that. So that's why I apologize sometimes, because I do know that it's a touchy subject.
Yeah.
I understand it's very hard to imagine relationships outside of monogamy, even if they're not your own. I get that that's hard, but that's why I talk about it, because
yeah, you need to.
We're all for being radical here on this podcast. And yeah, I think a part of that is, and non-monogamy is very queer adjacent, as we can see in Evelyn Hugo.
Right, exactly. It's plus, very... I mean, I'm pretty much the most monogamous person that I've ever known. Like, yeah, I'm obsessed with my wife. Like, I love when Madison is telling me that she like doesn't consider like primary partner to be like a term that's in your being.
It's
a relationship.
It's not part of my practice.
Exactly. Meanwhile, I'm like, oh, I have a primary partner. Lizzie, I like told Lizzie that afterwards, and we're like, yeah, we prioritize each other above all else. And like, we're obsessed with each other and like the two little princesses and like the rest of the world, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that's also queer in of itself.
Yes.
Like, and good, and is able to not only like coexist, but it's like just another flavor of ice cream and all of this.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like really important to live in a world where all of these are able to exist with each other.
Are true. Yes.
Are true and real and like, and as that's valid as each other.
Like, I never want to invalidate monogamy, because like, I fully understand monogamy just as I understand what I do. It's just like, it just doesn't, it's not everyone's thing, and that's okay. That's okay. Just like polyamory isn't everyone's thing. I get it. Like, trust. Yeah. But like, I love to hear that, because when I was in a relationship like that, or in a couple of relationships like that, where it was like, we were our number one priority, I was just like, this is very weird for me, and I don't know how to exist outside of this, though, because this is all I've been taught and shown of how a relationship works, is that you do have one primary partner that is your everything and whatever, and that always made me feel icky. So then finding out there was another way to do it, I hope maybe someone listening might consider, if they feel icky by monogamy, that there's other ways.
I agree. I feel like the thing is Lizzie and I feel so much freedom in our relationship.
Yeah.
Like being primary partners to each other is like freeing. Like we feel yeah. most wild and are most ourselves in this relationship mm-hmm. we have with each other. And I'm of the opinion that if you're with someone and being their primary partner, whatever, like if that sounds like your relationship, but you don't feel free and wild.
Exactly.
Change things.
Yeah. Because that's what like, it comes down to. No matter what yeah. that looks like for you, if you don't feel free to be yourself and to be your own individual.
Yes.
And to have like, yeah, just freedom, then change it. No matter what change it looks it. Like. No matter what no it looks matter like. Monogamy, what it looks non-monogamy, like. Fucking friendships, fucking because, any relationship.
Yeah. Because Lord knows there are so many people that are like, coerced into just the same way that people are coerced into monogamous relationships. So yes. people are coerced into polyamorous, like non-monogamous relationships.
And I was in high school and yeah. I hated non-monogamy because of it. And I hated polyamorous people. Whenever anyone would bring it up, I'd be like, that's bullshit. Like you're toxic. Yes. And I crossed it out completely. So I've been there. If anyone says, yeah. I've been there. Like, I know yeah. there's toxic polyamorous.
Yeah. There's toxic everything.
It's toxic every day. Yeah.
So the key is to just be in a relationship where you feel free and wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our yeah. sag asses were like, you have to feel free. You have to.
Freedom is everything. And just find where you feel free.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that whole aside, everyone. I'm happy to, I'm so excited to have an excuse to bring up non-monogamy again.
I know.
I loved when Evelyn said, this is so Kaylor. It was one thing when we were really just friends, but now that we had something to hide, we had to start hiding it.
Oh my God. Okay. Them kissing in the like laundry room.
In the laundry room.
Them fucking kissing in that laundry room and then sleeping in the same bed but never kissing for like weeks.
It's giving August. Oh, it's giving but you were never mine. It's giving we were twisted in bed sheets but you were never mine.
It's giving put your lips close to mine as long as they don't touch.
It's giving it's nice yeah. to have a friend.
Oh my God. Yes, it is. It certainly is.
Oh my goodness. Her winning this Oscar or like the, not her winning, but like the whole Oscar thing is so reminiscent of the Grammy thing. And Evelyn says, I wanted an Oscar for myself. And if I had stuck it out with Dawn a little bit longer, I could have had one tonight. And I know that this book came out before Reputation, but.
Because like, who knows? I wonder if Taylor has thought that about her and Calvin Harris.
That's what I wonder.
Yeah. Or like what other kind of like big musician? She wasn't really like, I guess Harry Styles. I don't know. Harry
Dawn feels very John to me.
John Mayer.
Dawn feels very John Mayer to me.
Wow. Yeah. I love that.
And I know she didn't win for Speak Now, right? Or she didn't win for Red. I honestly, I don't know a great record track.
Her second one was 1989.
Oh, so what was the first? Fearless. So I don't think Speak Now or...
Okay, we have to look this up.
But her admitting, I could have gotten an Oscar for myself if I had kept bearding. If I had kept up with this PR relationship, which is furthermore proof that... The shit Calvin Harris was going off about on Twitter about bearding for his Grammy is just what happens in real life.
Wow. Fearless did win Album of the Year.
Yes. That's what it was. Because I remember it was a huge, that's what got her. That's why.
Fearless won Album of the Year. I'm like shaken to my core.
So now it's like, okay. So let's think either Speak Now or Rep or Red. I mean. Wow. Maybe Red vibes of maybe I could have gotten a Grammy if I would have stuck it out with John Mayer. Maybe I could have gotten a Grammy if I would have stuck it out with Jake Gyllenhaal. Maybe I could have gotten a Grammy if I stuck it out.
Wow. I can't believe she won for Fearless. I think I really had it in my head that she won for Red in 1989. Wow. That makes sense.
That was why for Speak Now, she wrote it all herself because she was like, I want to be recognized for just my writing. Mm-hmm. And then she didn't win because they were probably like, girlie's getting a little too cocky.
Yeah, that was nice for one album.
Yeah,
Taylor.
That was really cute for a little country girl, but
yeah.
Exactly. Now she's trying to write rock songs on her own. So let's not gas her too hard.
Speak Now is totally the most underrated.
It is. And it was my favorite growing up.
That's so sweet. I can't wait for Speak Now era to begin again.
Me too.
Begin again. Ironic. I feel like The Archer was written as a sort of, damn, I really don't know how to do this.
I say that, like, I want that.
I say I don't want that, but what if I do? That's why The Archer is so much different than just a coming out song to me. It's mm-hmm. like a I don't know when I can come out song.
Yes, absolutely.
How amazing is it that she gives us these gifts of her, like, actual complicated feelings? There's so many artists who give us songs that are just polished ends of feelings, and she gives us music that's the messy middle.
And what I love about Gaylor's is we're also able to see her songs where she does kind of give us a polished version mm-hmm. of her emotions, and those tend to be the ones that are more focused around PR narratives. Yeah. And we're able to make that difference, or that mm-hmm. see that difference, I mean. Mm-hmm. So I love that you said that. Mm. It's true. She gives us these, like, raw emotions of, not only am I telling you that I'm probably queer, but here's my journey that I'm still in the middle of right now. And I'm not going to wait mm-hmm. until I know how to do it to let you know that I'm on this journey of figuring it out. She's not going to wait till it is a polished thing.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm just going to do it as I figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad our podcast is named after that song.
Me too.
When you look up The Archer on Spotify, uh-huh. on my phone, our podcast comes up first because I follow it.
Yeah.
But it's right under the song, though, now. Like, when you search it.
I love that.
I'm just going to graze over these quickly. I'm sorry, I have so many quotes. Maybe I'll post these notes on Patreon, honestly.
Oh, I love that. Do that.
Because it is kind of jumbled, but, like, if you want to look at them, you can. Do. You've worked so hard for a life so grand, and now all you want are the smallest freedoms, the daily peace of loving plainly. Reminded me of New Year's Day.
Reminds me of The Lucky One.
Oh, wow. They tell you that you're lucky, but you're so confused.
Yeah. And, like, all you actually now want is to go away to another country and, like, be by yourself.
Yeah. And to buy a piece of land somewhere.
Yeah.
Choose the Rose Garden.
Over Madison Square.
Yeah. Like that. It just reminded me of New Year's Day because, like, how she says, like, the mundane things that you do are the most important.
No, of course. Yeah. I think New Year's Day, like, that in particular has been in my head so much because, obviously, like, less than a month ago, it was New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So that song was, like, really prevalent and around. And I just, like, I'm so obsessed with that idea. That is what Evelyn and Celia's life was like. Celia cooking burgers on the grill in their little, like, house that no one knew they were sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Only being able to be in their house together and just the mundane things, not actually being able to celebrate midnight out and about at a party together, but then cleaning up bottles the next day together.
Because it's their house
and they make the rules.
And it reminds me of the scene in the Lover music video where she's watching her lover, like, talk to other people, or, like, I guess flirt with other people. And she's across the room, like, sad because she's like, I can't do anything about this. Like, no one knows we're together. There was even a part, like, exactly like that. I'm not sure if I wrote it down, but one of her husbands she got married to, they moved in together and they both were just like, we'll throw a couple parties a year at our house and make it look like we sleep in the same room and then people will believe it. And it reminds me of, like, secret sessions, how, like, there's, like, pictures of Joe's, like, her laptop screensaver, and then, like, there's pictures of, like, the SNL cast in her New York apartment, and there's a framed picture of Joe, like, right in the shot. Like, how fucking convenient, you know? Just these things that, like, people think are a stretch, and they aren't, because people in Hollywood have to do that. Oh, it's right here. Rex and Evelyn agreed not to sleep together or share a bed. Evelyn says they can throw a party a few times a year to make it look like they live together, and Rex can sleep with other women and just not get caught.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, the part where it's like, you thought she'd come back to you, and Evelyn goes, I knew she'd come back to me.
Hit post on Twitter comparing that to Cardigan. Yeah.
Like, had me shaking in my little boots. I was like, no one wonder. No wonder everyone fucking reads this book. Like the Gaylors. Yeah. Like,
and then her leaving me was death by a thousand cuts.
Oh, that was too real. Yeah, that was too obvious.
That was a little too clear. Yeah.
And the paper rings and the way that they got married in bed with hair ties.
I know. Well, I'm of the belief that paper rings is about a contract. Like,
I have also thought that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that to me, I'm like, that song doesn't feel romantic to me. And therefore, I'm not going to attribute it to Celia and Evelyn.
Yeah, fair. Totally valid. I've also seen it that way, especially when she's like, we went from friends to this. Like, you can't really call it anything because it's just a contract. This.
Exactly. This. When we went
whatever they decided is.
To this.
And then of course she says, I searched for Celia every party we went to. I didn't lay eyes on her. Instead, Rex and I painted the town red.
Oh God.
You painted the town what color? You did what to the town now? Similar to the way that Taylor painted the town blue with Joe. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, okay. They became quickly Democrats. Quickly, I want to bring up this realization that I've come with the more that I've thought about Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince.
Yes.
I don't think that song is about Joe even. Because like I was under the impression that it was like, you know, a cowboy like me type beard thing.
Yeah.
I think that Taylor's literally talking about her public persona is Miss Americana. She's and her private persona is being the Heartbreak Prince. In her group of friends, like the Heartbreak Prince because she's so obsessed with being heartbreak. And also she like, you know, casually uses like mask identifiers in her friend group.
You know what? And why is she the king now? Why does she go from prince to king?
Maybe because she's not heartbroken anymore.
Wow. Katie, I love that interpretation so much more than it being about her and Joe. Because that didn't always quite fit for me. And I was like, no way it's about her and like a girl lover either. It's just like, that makes sense though. We're so sad. Me and my little weird fake public persona are so sad.
We paint the town blue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like we have to paint the town because we have to be out and about. But I refuse to put on a like shiny veneer right now. And that is so true for like the second half of Lover era.
Yeah.
Where she was in all black. It's like she was out and about promoting the album, but she was devastated in all black. And
crying everywhere.
Crying everywhere. Yeah. And like she was living in her heartbreak.
Mm-hmm. She really was painting the town blue, like crying on every platform.
Yeah.
Sad. Visibly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I wanted to bring that up.
No, yeah, that's a great interpretation. I love that. Thank I think that you. Makes so much more sense. Now I'm like going over the lyrics again. I'm like, wow, yeah.
Thank
voted
you.
Most likely to run away with you. And so that would make sense too, because it's like Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince, me, was voted most likely to run away with you, maybe being Joe, of like in that circumstance. Like
also, I just think that anytime she's saying something like, you and me have a big reputation, or like, oh, people are voting, people call you the Heartbreak Prince. I'm like, no.
No one's saying that.
No one knows who he is.
No one knew who he was.
Like, until again, no offense, Joe Alwyn, but like, who are you and what have you done?
Yeah. And I think I've said before, I don't have anything against Joe. I think he's just a victim of Hollywood bearding just as much as Taylor is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Who was he before Taylor?
Yeah. I mean, just a man working at a yogurt shop.
Exactly. And a teal shirt, allegedly. I just got to the part where I talked about people thinking that, or they talked about people thinking that they were swingers, and I put in quote parentheses lol Blake Lively and Ryan with Taylor.
Yes, wait, oh my god, if only Joe was ever publicly seen with Taylor, because I swear
I'd be like, god. Joe and Ryan are together.
Yes.
I would love that. But Joe was in New York, I believe, at some point around the time that Taylor was with them. Whatever. Anyways.
He's probably been there.
Yeah. At some point he was there. I mean, he is New York City, right?
Oh, God. Don't even get me started.
And Paul Scott, according to Taylor. So, yeah, I thought that was hilarious because me and a few of other Gaylors are like totally in on the thruple for Blake and Ryan and Taylor, but instead of just being like, maybe Ryan and Taylor are together, or Blake and Taylor are together, which, what a thing.
What a thing.
What a thing that would be.
Yeah, seriously.
The mention of Stonewall in this.
I know.
No wonder Taylor knows so much about her Stonewall history. She was studying up for the book that she ghost wrote. Why else would she know so much other than if there was like a reason she had to study up her history to write this book, clearly.
I know, it is so interesting. It's like a Forrest Gump moment when like, oh, they happen to be in New York at Stonewall, you know. God, that part of the book really depresses me, because just these four super rich people just like, looking down.
They have it hard, huh?
They have it hard.
Like literally looking down. They're on the roof when they are like talking about it happening.
Yeah.
They're on a rooftop.
Like, also, when they're like, we just need to donate money. It's like, what are they donating money to at that point? Mm-hmm. What was the 1960s version of like the HRC? Like,
I'm exactly. So and when were any of these organizations not corrupt in the way that, like, was any of this money really being used for a good...
Well, yeah, like, I think, like, does John, is that his name, like, Celia's husband and Harry's lover, John? Like, I think John is like, oh, yeah, I know, I have connections, we can get it into the right hands.
I was just about to say, he was like, he said, like, call da-da-da, he'll know where to put it.
Right, so it's like, maybe they were getting into the hands of, like, actual, like, radical group that, like, existed then. It's just so hard to picture, like, you know, very, like, privileged, literally standing in like a penthouse looking down on the peasants being like, we'll just give them money.
She says, we're standing on the rooftop looking downtown, so where Stonewall would have been happening from the upper east side, just looking at the city and imagining that there's things happening down there, but they don't even know. And the only material thing that they think that they can do is just throw some money in another way that they don't know what's going on with it or where it's actually going, what it's actually doing. Yeah, it was interesting. And the self-awareness of Evelyn kind of reminds me of like Taylor's self-awareness in a lot of ways, of where it's like, oh, you're so close, baby. Like, you're so close. Mm-hmm. So like Evelyn says, I was so self-involved, so singularly focused that I rarely took time to think of the people out there like myself.
Mm.
And that sounds like something Taylor would think or say at some point.
Completely. I love that, like, because we're getting this from Evelyn's 80-year-old perspective, she is able to make that judgment that, like, I was making on her too. Like, she was able to be like, I feel like I was a coward for a lot of my life, and I see that now.
She's like, I didn't think about them because I was so wrapped up in my own shit.
Yeah. And like, I gave them money because that's the thing I could do. Another real Taylor move, just giving money to organizations because she's not in a position to say anything about it.
To protect herself. Yeah.
To protect herself. Yeah.
She says, here they were revolting against the police in the bame of their right to be themselves while I was sitting in a golden prison of my own making.
Oh my God. Are you
they told me all of my cages were mental. A golden prison of my own making. Gold cage hostage to my feelings. The song that came out just months after this book came out.
Insane. Just incredible. Like, it's so much. It's so, so much. And again, that self-awareness of it being like gold and luxurious, but still a cage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the connections are really bananas.
Yeah.
At some point, it does start to feel bizarre that it like wouldn't be connected to Taylor because of how prevalent it is. Yeah, exactly.
To some degree. Even if it's just like Taylor Reid Jenkins and Taylor Swift sat down and had lunch one time.
Yeah.
And Taylor told her some stories, you know, like even to that degree. Like, but also to the degree that Taylor could have very well fucking written this entire book by herself and slapped Taylor Reid Jenkins' name on it. You know, like it could, there's a whole spectrum of ways that Taylor could be connected, but it's very, very, the further into the book you get, it's even harder to believe that there's not some way.
Yeah, it is.
So yeah, she says, we started filtering money privately that day and I've continued for the rest of my life. I imagine that's probably what Taylor's doing.
Me too. I hope, yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, this part was really interesting when Evelyn was describing her and Celia's like tension about Evelyn being bisexual. She said, I was a lesbian when she loved me and a straight woman when she hated me.
Yeah. I mean, that really gets into that pain of, you know, your partner, like, just a very, like, immature way for Celia to view her, you know, like, and Evelyn really viewed Celia in immature ways, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, Celia blaming it on something tangible, blaming mm-hmm. their relationship issues on something tangible, instead of just facing the facts that they both were navigating it poorly from the beginning. Boundaries and wise.
Evelyn is one of the least attracted to men, bisexual people.
Yes.
Like in history. She literally corely identified as bisexual because she was like, I know at one point I felt yes. romantic feelings about a man, even though I mm-hmm. can't even remember feeling that way at this point.
Yeah. Even like, though it's Celia who I love.
Yeah, Celia is my one and only, but I still am bisexual because I need to honor that part of myself. Mm-hmm. Like, which is very much how I think that Taylor could view her bisexuality as well, yes. if she does yeah. in fact identify as bisexual, yeah. Just because she does not seem to be interested in men anymore. But anyhow, like, for Celia to say you're like acting like Evelyn straight when she's mad at her, it's like, that's not her problem. Evelyn's problem is that she cares more about fame and her own career,
which aligns with her straightness.
Yes, like she has to be straight to be famous. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that like Celia's in a position where she doesn't really care about the fame mm-hmm. aspect. She cares about being an artiste, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's very comfortable for her to live in like the fact that because she's such a good actress and yes. she's never been like a starlet or like a bombshell the way right. that Evelyn was. Like, she knows that if Hollywood rejected her, first of all, the fact that Celia comes from extreme
I was
wealth.
About to say yeah and that extreme Evelyn calls wealth. That out around this time. She's like, you only don't care because you know that you can fall back on your parents' money. And Evelyn's yeah. like, I've worked from the ground up for this, which is mm-hmm. why I care so much about my career, because mm-hmm. I need this.
She needs that, and she built everything on being desirable to men.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with Evelyn's desire. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like, she needs to be seen as desirable to men in order to maintain what she's built. And yeah. it's devastating that instead of Celia seeing that and being like, my poor love of my life, like this poor angel that I love so much,
stuck in the system that she can't control.
Yeah, like this poor thing having to be sexy for men just to maintain mm-hmm. what she's created.
Exactly.
Like, no empathy. Instead, it's like she shouldn't even care about that. Mm-hmm. Like, she shouldn't need to be sexy to men. And it's
yeah,
like,
she shouldn't, but look where we're at.
Yeah. Like, meet her where she's at.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it goes into another point we were just talking about. Evelyn says, I wasn't interested in finding a label for what I already knew. I loved men. I loved Celia. And I am okay with that.
Mm. I love that she said, I loved men and I loved Celia, as if I know. She did love men.
I know. It's interesting that she equates that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't think you loved men in the same way you loved Celia, but... if that's what you believe.
If that's what you believe, that's fine.
You. Yeah.
If only the lesbian master doc had existed for Evelyn Hugo.
Right. I know. I know.
Because like, she is like grossed out by men for so much of the book.
All of it is like compet.
Yeah. A lot of it is. Especially now that we know that Don Adler was so manipulative. Like, when he turns out to be an abusive asshole
exactly.
who like is manipulative, it's like, what if he was just manipulating you, sweetie?
Were you in love with him, or was this just an emotionally abusive roller coaster that you were getting hits of dopamine off of when he was nice to you? Like,
was he, yeah, was this, were you in love, or was he the first fucking person in your life to care for you?
Exactly.
The fact that she felt this magnetic charge and spark with mm-hmm. Celia, anyways, we're not, yeah, I don't need to get into whether she was really bisexual or not. It's just like, it's just so crazy that Celia couldn't just have empathy for Evelyn being in this very fucked up position. Yeah. And
she's more mad at Evelyn than the system itself that they're both navigating.
Yeah. And like, she, you'd think that she would be faced with that reality every single day. That's just giving Celia way too much credit, I think, as a white person, like in the 60s. Mm. But like, she couldn't be like, I'm with a woman of color that pretends to be white every single day.
Yeah.
Like, that in of itself, you should be like, maybe she's going through things I can't comprehend.
Yeah.
Like, maybe
she doesn't leave space for that.
No, she doesn't. And that's like why they truly had to come back to each other after they mm-hmm. both grew.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because Evelyn needed to learn boundaries and Celia mm-hmm. needed to learn how to like be empathetic.
Yeah. No, yeah, really though.
Yeah.
I'm just laughing because I wrote down such silly things, but they're just buzzwords. Celia bought a bottle of Dom Perignon for Evelyn's 36th birthday. This quote, Evelyn said, "All I've ever wanted was for you to be truly mine, but you were never mine." Not really.
Oh, God.
Because you were never mine.
Never mind.
Evelyn said, "It's all fine in hindsight, except that I spent years with a scarlet A on my chest while women and men across the country screwed each other's brains out."
Wow.
Scarlet letter.
Yeah, just and just that idea that like you can be entertained by me as long as you are hating me. Like that mm-hmm. really summarizes the 1989 backlash. Mm-hmm. That like everyone was like everyone loved 1989 so much, but like also they hated Taylor.
Yeah. Just like
yeah.
everyone hated Evelyn but loved the movie where she was being sexy and having yeah. sex with Dawn.
Yeah.
I wrote down the whole quote where she says death by a thousand cuts because it almost sounds like it could have been word for word something Taylor said. Again, one of those moments in the books, in the book. I put Celia in a position to continually have to approve of my choices at her own expense. Celia may have left me in a huff, but it was a death by a thousand cuts. I hurt her with these tiny scratches day after day, and then I got surprised when it left a wound too big to heal.
God, just the character of Evelyn is so similar to Taylor in that they simultaneously are so self-aware and self-critical
mm-hmm.
and also so hard on themselves.
Like, it reminds me of like self-harm. Sorry.
Continue. No, go ahead. Yeah. Like how do you mean in that way?
In the way that Evelyn sleeps with men feels mm-hmm. like a little bit of a self-harm at times.
Oh yeah.
And the way that I know people in my life that do that, you know, like it's very common. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also the way that Evelyn kind of like her actions are self-harm is just because of her career, like the way that she continues to build her career in a way that is harming her constantly, but yet she still wants it. That's like harming herself, and the way that she puts herself in these relationships where consciously or unconsciously she's not happy and stays in them is self-harm.
Exactly right. Yeah, self-harm.
It's just another form. Like,
yeah. I think that the way this book ends with Evelyn mm-hmm. basically being like, I've made horrible choices. I've done horrible things.
Yeah.
And it's like, give yourself a break.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing that she ever did, of course, was how she treated Monique's dad.
Yes.
And everything with that. Like, that is really fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. It's like she really sees herself like she was selfish, like she was horribly selfish. But it's also like, I don't know, like all of us are horribly selfish sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of us are going to have a life where we make like one selfish decision and we're like, why did I act that way in that moment? And mm-hmm. her being like, I wouldn't have changed anything. Like I still would have done it because it protected them. It's yeah. like, give yourself a break. I don't know. It's just, it's really crazy that if we fall under the idea that Taylor sat down with Taylor Jenkins Reid in whatever capacity, and this book was written from Taylor's experience up to right before Reputation came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Taylor's grown in a way that, like, unfortunately, Evelyn wasn't even able to grow.
Totally.
Like, up until she was 80.
Totally.
Because, like, I think that Taylor, as evidenced in Miss Americana, the film, has grown a lot in her hiatus time. And I can only imagine that in the last 2 years of the pandemic, forcing people into isolation, and especially allowing rich people to live in complete isolation.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like she's probably grown so much.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I've thought about that before, but not in the context of this book, actually, as this like a marker almost of Taylor around the time Miss Americana was kind of pre-pandemic.
Yeah, pre-pandemic.
Honestly, I'll put my notes on this on the Patreon.
Yeah.
So everyone can see all of the notes that I have. And we did get into a lot of what I have left anyways, of like All Too Well and the parallels there.
I love those parallels. I'll be forever changed now that you brought up the fact that she has red hair and the blonde girl is like in like on a terrace in Spain, essentially.
The quote describing their Spain apartment was, the bedroom had an oversized balcony that looked out onto the ocean.
Oh, incredible.
Is that not the exact image that was hanging on the wall?
Yes, it is.
In the music video.
Of a blonde woman.
And I think the last one that I just want to read is right at the end. She says, my truth has been there for them to grab if they'd pay attention. I had been my triest, I had been my truest self. I'd been my truest self for help of my best friend to ease the pain of the loss of my lover. But of course they got it wrong. They never did care about getting it right. The media are always going to tell whatever story they want to tell because they always have. They always will. It was then that I knew the only time anyone would know anything true about my life was when I told them directly in a book.
Oh my God. I feel like everything is pointing to Taylor releasing a book in a few years.
Yeah, I think she's going to.
I think there's going to
be connections to this book, and everyone's going to backtrack to this book and be like, oh my God, was Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo about Taylor Swift? Yes. And the general public is going to be like, what? How do we let that slip right out of our what? And all of us gaylers are going to be like slow blink.
I just know that when Taylor comes out,
yeah,
like as opposed to her soft launch, which she's doing now and she has been doing, I know that when she like actually comes out, which I'm manifesting will happen, gaylers are going to be the most gracious, loving people. Like there will be, of course there'll be I told you so's, but the I told
coming
you
from
so's,
me honestly I will say I told you so, but it's with love and peace.
I mean, I feel like what the I told you so's are going to be in like the Gaylord group when we're all like, we fucking knew.
Yeah, we're like in these motherfuckers.
Public, yeah, in public, yeah. I feel like we're all going to be like, welcome. Like,
do you want our PowerPoints and our notes?
Yeah. Exactly. Because it's like, yeah, we knew. Okay. So yeah.
Thank you everyone for yelling at me to read this for so long. Cause I probably wouldn't if we didn't have the podcast. I'd probably just like continue to read everyone else's theories, but I'm very glad that I did. It's a great book.
Yeah. You liked it.
Yeah. And I, let me be honest. I hated the beginning. I hated the first half.
Yeah.
I kind of hated the writing. I was very bored. It could be the thing that I hate fiction, but
no, I mean, Monique's parts were really hard to get through.
Exactly.
They were really hard to get through. In general, I'm very uncomfortable with how she portrayed Monique, like very flat. I have personally never heard a biracial person express feeling like they were half white, half black, like in the way that she kind of portrayed Monique as feeling. Obviously there's millions of biracial people that have very different experiences, so that very well could be how some feel, but like all the biracial people I know identify as like, you know, they're not half of anything, they're like one whole person,
right?
And it's like kind of painful to hear that like half. So definitely not a perfect book by any means,
but it did do a great job of portraying a lot of situation. I don't know, just a lot of like Evelyn's internal
landscapes. Evelyn's parts were so good. It felt like two different people writing it, honestly. And like, yes, for listeners, Madison is giving me a look right now. That's like, maybe it was two different yeah. like writers. Maybe it was two yeah. different people for that reason. But like reading it, you know, not in the context of Gaylor, I was like, oh, she's just purposefully being a bad writer for half of it to make it two different voices. Exactly.
Right.
Which very well may be true, but also why make your reader suffer that way?
No, exactly. I mean, it was hard, Katie. That's why it took me so long to read this fucking book. Because getting through that first half took longer than like any book I've ever read. Like genuinely, I could not pay attention. It was not keeping my focus. But it ended up being a great book. And I loved, I just loved the explanation of like the male gaze and Compet and mm-hmm. her weird battle with like labels and like mm-hmm. the hints of polyamory swinger and all the that
relationship anarchy.
The relationship anarchy and just the confirmation that Hollywood really works the way that Gaylor's have always assumed it has.
Yes.
It's the biggest takeaway.
Definitely. I do think that it's a must read for being deep down in the Gaylor rabbit hole.
Yeah. Or anyone in the PR rabbit hole, honestly. Even
blind people, item like, rabbit hole.
Wait, one last thing I wanted to say. I had a friend text me because I tweeted about Evelyn Hugo, like a little picture of Taylor in green dresses, and it was like me after finishing Evelyn Hugo. And a friend of mine that I've been friends with since I was like 7 years old, she's probably my longest friend, even though we are not close by any means. We probably talk like every 6 months. We will meet up for lunch, you know, that kind of thing, catch up. She texted me, which we don't text either unless we're making plans to meet up for a minute, and she was like, I have to know your thoughts on Evelyn Hugo.
Oh,
this is also a straight girl. I was like, did you read it? I was like, why do you want to know my thoughts? Did you read Evelyn Hugo? And she was like, yeah, I read Evelyn Hugo a while back. And she was like, I really liked it. And I was like, interesting reaction. Yeah. And so I told her, I was like, you know, I was bored at first, but now I like it. And she was like, it makes me really believe all of your Gaylor stuff. She was like, this really makes me understand more why you do what you do on your podcast. And I was like, yeah, I'm glad that it gave you that context, because I understand I look crazy to people that don't understand that this is how Hollywood works. But she was like, I can't believe any PR I see now. She was like, when you said that Tom Holland and Zendaya were fake, I like was blown away, because I realized I had never even thought of that possibility. And it's very well a possibility. And I was like, just a fascinating little IRL friend of mine, straight. Interesting that you read this book.
Very interesting.
Interesting.
Soon, in like 10 years, if we're still doing this podcast, it will just be us speculating on everyone's sexuality.
Yeah.
It'll slowly turn into... Because
we get the say at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, we decide who's gay.
At the end of the day, we brand the label. We give you the label that you have to keep and stand within your boundaries of your label.
It's us. We decided. Yeah.
We're kidding. Please don't live your life based on labels. Do whatever makes you happy.
Do whatever makes you happy. Okay, so thank you so much for listening.
I gotta get out of here. Thank you guys. We'll see you next time.